Blog Talk Radio.
Last month, when Mayor Thomas Menino announced that after five terms in office as the longest-serving mayor of Boston, he would not run for re-election, the floodgates of candidates opened wide for all. Poor health stuffed Menino's political dynasty, but left huge shoes to fill. Enter the floodgates of candidates, including the 12 now running in the city's upcoming September 24th primary. Nearly half of them are people of color, a record for a city with a checkered racial past. Of the 12 candidates, only one of them is a woman, Charlotte Gola Ritchie, former three-term state representative who has served under both Governor Deval Patrick and Mayor Thomas Menino. Charlotte breaks the mold when it comes to balancing family with a stellar political and civic engagement career. We interviewed Charlotte on today's show, and our goal is to interview all 12 candidates before the September primary. And we'll showcase some quick interviews from young people attending the Christian Education Congress of the First District of the AME Church here in Dover, Delaware, as we dig deep into the summer activities of young people across the country. Hello, this is Carol Copeland Thomas, and I am broadcasting live at the conclusion of the Christian Education Conference of Congress of the First District African Methodist Episcopal Church, the summer activity that all young people from the district come to. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. I am here in Dover, Delaware. My children used to come to this conference years ago, and now I am attending, have enjoyed myself thoroughly, and I'm going to, first of all, air the interview that we did a couple of days ago with Charlotte Gola Ritchie, who is running for mayor of Boston. Love for you to listen to this, and then we have some young people who have given us great insight about this conference and where they are headed in their future. First, our interview with Charlotte Gola Ritchie.
I'm delighted to introduce to my guests a wonderful, resilient leader. I call her a friend. I've known her for a number of years. I've admired her, and she has jumped right in there as candidate for mayor of the city of Boston. Charlotte Gola Ritchie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Carol. It is really a pleasure and a privilege to be on the show with you. I've known you for many years and respect your work, admire what you've accomplished in your life and career, and I'm just happy to be in your company today.
Well, thank you so much. How has it been since you jumped in the race? There are probably 13 or 14 other candidates that are running. You are actually the only woman in the race. Give us a sense of the reason for going full throttle into this mayoral campaign, and what has it been for you so far?
It's been going exceedingly well, and I'll tell you why. As you may recall, I served in the House of Representatives and also as chair of the Housing and Urban Development Committee in the legislature. Starting back in 1995, I was elected in 1994, elected again in 96 and 98. So I served, I think most people would say, with distinction, but it was a little while ago. So I haven't been in that level of sort of the politics and in elective office for quite some time. Yet when I decided that I was going to throw my hat in the ring at the end of April, a lot has come together very rapidly, and the response has been very, very favorable. I decided I was going to run April 21st, and then I had to quickly pull an organization together, hire a campaign manager, start to begin raising money, doing all the things that you need to do to ramp up to have a campaign that's going to be viable. Our first test was to be able to get on the ballot, and that's not a simple process. So, but with relative speed, maybe about 2.5 weeks to be exact, we were able to collect well beyond the requisite 3,000 signatures. We got over 8,100 signatures filed very, very quickly, which showed that there is There are folks out there who are craving a campaign and a candidate who is experienced and who is able who has a vision for the city and is able to galvanize the electorate around some important things. And I guess that's what we're going to talk about on this call.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm thinking about the fact that you certainly have served as head of housing development under Mayor Menino. Mayor Menino has a very lengthy term in office. We know his work. We know his legacy. And I'm sure it was a very difficult decision for him to step down. Anybody who is going to get elected into that seat is going to have very big shoes to fill, you included. What is your vision that makes you different than the other dozen or so candidates who are running for the same office, Charlotte?
So, you know, I think now that I've been in the company of the other candidates, there are 12 of us, I've gotten a sense that we all probably have general agreement on the major issues like schools and jobs and economic development and, you know, the need for housing for our workforce and, you know, the need to maybe sort of handle issues around public safety. When you drill down, you're going to see some differences in terms of prioritization and also around style and approach. And I think what I know for sure is that a mayor, the CEO of an organization, absolutely sets the tone, the tenor, the direction, and determines where to place emphasis and brings a host of experiences to bear. And I think this is where you can distinguish me from the others in the field. So my vision is absolutely about trying to pull the city around, unite the city, I'll say, around these issues that have presented themselves as challenges for us for a very, very long time. And whether that is a serious joblessness in certain sections of our city, gun violence in certain sections of our city, the need to create and preserve for a long time affordable housing for our workforce, for our seniors, to address issues like homelessness and poverty. That is not just about older adult single people. It's about families with children who are without permanent housing. So these are the kinds of things that I absolutely am going to focus on, and I think that in this year's election we have a very unique opportunity to bring the city together around these issues that matter most.
What would be the primary or the issue that you would tackle first if you are elected to the mayor's office?
So I'm kind of mentioning in general, I think it is the general issue or sort of umbrella issue of the unity piece, and I'm not trying to sound kind of like in a dream world. I know that's going to take a lot of work because it's going to be hard to go after any one of these issues if I haven't gotten the support of people all across the city who understand that we have a crisis in certain sections of the city, and it's now time for all of us to roll up our sleeves, redouble our efforts, and go after this. But let's say if I took the issue of the schools, that's one that has been discussed the most. It is one that impacts the future of our children. We've got 57,000 students in the Boston public schools, so I'll start with that. We do have this golden opportunity to bring in new leadership in the form of a new school superintendent. We understand right now that we don't need to get a new school superintendent to tell us this, but we know that the issue of quality within any given school or even across the system is one that concerns the public and the media and, you know, and beyond. Parents, the students, teachers, and so on. That is a universal issue that people seem to be speaking to, the need around quality. I would love to have this superintendent who has a dynamic track record in the area of education and urban education to be able to come in and state for us clearly and definitively what quality is and to tell us how we are going to measure this thing. There has to be a plan immediately for the public. Everybody's, I think folks are out of, they've run out of patience, and we've run out of time as a city. There's got to be super urgency around this issue. We need a plan in terms of how to ramp up and get this quality concern, addressed ASAP. And we need to know what those benchmarks are, that timetable for arriving at a place where all of our schools can be of satisfactory quality, and where our children we know are going to get the education they deserve to have and will be college-ready and career-ready once they leave the system.
You know, I'm looking at your prioritization in this unity piece with schools, poverty, affordable housing, gun violence, which we'll talk about in just a few minutes, and joblessness. A lot of it has to do with the economy. And I wanted to hear your platform on continuing to build a robust Boston in the midst of an economy in the country that has had its difficult time, certainly in the last couple of years. God forbid we move in the direction of my hometown of Detroit, which was declared bankrupt yesterday, breaks my heart completely. What would be your platform for moving in a rapidly different direction from the cities around the country that are hurting because the economy has hit them badly?
Okay, so that is bad news about Detroit, and I have family in the Midwest and in Detroit and all of that, and I hate to hear that news as well. So let's start from at this point. We have we need a mayor, and the mayor who is stepping down, Mayor Tominino, who I worked with for 8 years, did a very strong job in this regard, and I don't think there's anybody who's going to debate that this issue. We need a mayor who is going to be a strong manager, somebody who understands the fiscal responsibility that the next mayor is going to have to handle. None of us, none of the candidates running for mayor have been mayor before, okay? So this is going to be a new job, a new experience for anyone who takes the reins, okay? But at least I can say something that I believe, the most or one of the most qualified or in terms of as a manager based on my experience having run a city agency. It doesn't mean that other candidates don't have other kinds of experiences that would be useful, but at least I have run a city agency with having to oversee a staff of 200 people with a $100 million budget from different sources and have handled that, I got high marks for my job as a manager, as a chief of housing working in the cabinet. And I am going into this endeavor with my eyes open. I would never want to have a situation in Boston like what we're seeing in some other places. So we don't even want to talk about that. We want to continue the progress strong fiscal management. We have a strong bond rating. We have, a city that withstood a very difficult financial period in the history of the United States with this great recession better than,
other
places, right. So we're going to build on that success so that we can do the other things we need to do around the schools, around addressing gun violence, around addressing poverty, addressing affordable housing. We can do that. Why? Because we have kept our fiscal house in order, and I would expect and would not accept any alternative to that.
What about public safety? Here we had this horrific bombing that took place on Patriots Day in April. We know the results of that. How would you prevent a future bombing episode like that from happening? Obviously, no one can wave a magic wand and totally prevent these kind of horrific events, but from the point of view of being the mayor of the city and public safety being critically important, how would public safety factor in with prevention of these tragic events that took place in April?
Okay, so let me just start by saying that my heart continues and will always go out to the victims of the Marathon bombing. We were all sort of stunned beyond belief to see that this could happen right in the middle of our very own city here. It's even hard to describe. And when I run into people that I know on the campaign trail who were in the vicinity and they share with me their stories, I'm just, you know, they are thankful. They're on their knees thanking the Lord, you know, for
right.
That they were, their lives were spared.
Mm-hmm.
And to those, you know, families who endured the terrible tragedy in terms of loss of life or loss of limb, you know, I just feel awful about that, and that's why the city galvanized so quickly around a fund to aid the victims.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what we learned from this is we saw in action a magnificent response on the part of our public safety officials, the police, the firefighters, the public health professionals, you know, healthcare professionals at our hospitals. They were just terrific in terms of their response. They saved lives. It was an integrated, very seamless effort. From at least that's what it looked like from me. And I wasn't right there in terms of I wasn't there on the front line. But what it appeared to me was it was just really this amazing response.
Am I taking that you would continue? And if something like this were threatening to the city, if in fact there were other perpetrators like the two young men who carried out this bombing, that you would have acted in accordance with the same way that Mayor Menino, Governor Patrick, and all of the law enforcement agencies cooperated to stem any kind of uproar that would take place as a result of what happened in April?
No, so you've asked about the public safety strategy or the prevention strategy. I have to say that if I were mayor, I would have wanted to see sort of swift action and minimal loss of injury and loss of life. I would definitely do my best around that. So that's for sure. But what I want to just say around the prevention is that we have learned some things. We have seen that Boston can be vulnerable, and so it is important for us to work hand in glove with the federal government, with state, local officials. So all of us have to pull together and have a prevention plan so that something like this would not occur ever again. And I'm imagining that that's going on right now, because I think that Mayor Menino and his team would absolutely want to do everything they could to put in place a prevention plan in that regard. But, you know, my public safety agenda, while it absolutely has to include a plan against, terrorism and some incident like that, it also has to be one that focuses on our neighborhoods and focuses on the sections of the city that have been racked by violent crime. And that's where maybe I differ from other candidates, this sense of urgency, this intensity around this particular issue, because the area where I have lived for 26 years, where I've raised my family, has had to grapple with crime in a way that other neighborhoods have not. And I have to promise and pledge to my neighbors that as mayor, we are going to address this issue once and for all.
Well, I'm sure you're tying that in, and you're watching, like all of us, the results of the verdict last Saturday with Trayvon Martin's case and George Zimmerman being let go because he was found not guilty. But the conversation now taking place in terms of safety, obviously, in our neighborhoods, the laws that are either helping or hindering our young people for staying safe. Give us a sense of your plan, your platform in terms of neighborhood safety and helping our young people to feel safe and to live productive lives.
So, you know, I know we hear this term a lot, which is community policing, but I want to revisit this. And we've seen, learned from successes during the 80s and the 90s, and I wanted to look at that again to see how we pull in law enforcement from various levels to address neighborhood crime, to address the what's called this, you know, iron pipeline of ammunition and guns coming up into Boston and finding its way to certain areas. I think I'm strong as a consensus builder, and I am a strong problem solver, and this is a big problem, this issue around trying to reclaim our streets from drugs and violence. I remember some years ago that there were businesses in my own neighborhood, the Bowdoin Geneva or Meeting House Hill area, that you know, thought that they might leave the area because of the rash of violence. In fact, we've lost some businesses because of that. And I and others in the community had worked to encourage businesses to stay, to help improve their facades when I worked at the City of Boston, to provide them with support and all of that. You know, these streets can be taken, by the negative elements one block at a time. They can also be taken back by the positive elements, by residents, by community-based organizations, by other key stakeholders, the clergy and others, one block at a time. And people and families and children in every neighborhood of the City of Boston deserve to feel safe and secure. Public safety in our neighborhoods must be the top priority. And, you know, I'll say, Carol, I don't have all of the answers, but I do have lived this. I've lived in the community. I have worked as an advocate in the community. I've helped to start a nonprofit organization in Roxbury, and have been a legislator and been a city official working in the city. Raised my family in the city. I think that there are a lot of people ready to address this. I'm on the advisory committee for Mothers for Justice and Equality, an advocacy organization that's saying enough already. You know, it's not okay that our children have to either dodge bullets or are being struck down by bullets. And I've marched in too many vigils. So that, you know, I think we've learned some things from the marathon bombing in terms of technology, the surveillance coverage that can be erected in troubled and high traffic spots. We know that there are this sort of key areas with high impact players that could be targeted. I just want us to be as proactive as we can be in our ability to identify criminals, to swiftly get them off the streets, to use newer technologies help with this issue, to strengthen the relationship between police and community, and to bring and marshal all the resources we can to address this issue.
Charlotte Zola-Ritchie, you are insightful, and we wish you the very best in your campaigning. Thank you so much for being a guest on my program. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Carol, for having me on your program. I look forward to coming back again.
Great.
Well, there you have it. That was an interview that I pre-recorded when I was still in Boston with Charlotte Zola-Ritchie, the only woman in the mayoral race for the primary. The primary will take place on September 24th. There are 12 candidates running. She is one of 12 and the only woman in the race. We are going to do our best to get the other 11 candidates on. It may be shorter, probably will be shorter interviews, but we want you to hear who they are and hear their platform so that you can make an honest and intelligent decision. If you live in the City of Boston, this particular leadership role is going to be really very important going forward. So we thank Charlotte for kicking it off with our interview series. We're going to switch gears now, and everybody's packing up and getting ready to go back to their respective homes. Our district resides all those who live in Delaware, parts of Pennsylvania, all of New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, and Bermuda. So it's a pretty wide district, and also the largest district in the African Methodist Episcopal Connectional Church. So we have two young people that we interviewed. We'd love to share those interviews with you so you can see their insight and how they enjoyed the Christian Educational Conference or Congress here in Dover, Delaware with First District AME Church.
Well, I'm talking now to one of our young women graduating from high school, getting ready to go off to college, and a sort of a veteran now of the Christian Education Congress. So tell us who you are, where you go to school, where you graduated from, church you belong to, and where you're headed off to college.
Hello, my name is Sylvia Riley. I'm 17 years old. I've gone to the Christian Ed Conference for 5 years now. I'm a graduate of Marist High School in Bayonne, New Jersey, and I'm going to be attending Caldwell College in Caldwell, New Jersey, to study liberal arts.
Wonderful. And I actually met Sylvia. For the first time in God knows how many years, I stayed in the dormitory here at Delaware State University, and I met Sylvia on my floor, and we chatted a bit, and she's a very bright young lady. Why is this significant for you?
For me,
the Christian Education Congress.
Sorry. Christian Education Congress for me is more of a chance for me to really get in touch with God again. So whenever I come, I get to be reconnected with Him, and I get to really hear what He really wants me to say, what He really wants me to hear. Because, you know, with all the hustle and bustle going around, here is a place where I can be, you know, removed from all that distraction and really get in tune with what's going on here.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I thank you so much for interviewing with me. I wish you the very best. And maybe 5 words or less, where is the Congress headed? Where do you see it headed?
I see it becoming a lot larger and really impacting in a larger way and, you know, really and really getting involved with more of the youth and really making us want to do more in our church community. And I really see it growing up and blowing up big, and I'm really excited for it.
Sylvia Riley, thank you so much, and all the best to you, too.
All right, thank
you. Take care.
Where did my
awesome. Hello, now we have another young man here at the Congress, and he's going to tell us who he is and where he is from, church he belongs to, and all that good stuff. Hello, welcome to the show. Tell us who you are.
Hello, I'm Tyreek Portwine. I'm from New York. I belong to St. Paul AME Church in Rockville Center on Long Island, and I'm 14 years old.
Great, and what grade are you in?
I'm going to the 10th.
Yes, all right. So tell us, is this your first, second, or third Congress that you've attended?
My first Congress.
And, oh, that's good. So tell us what your first impression was when you arrived on Monday, and how has it changed now that it's Thursday?
At first, I thought, wow, this is going to be a long and boring, drawn-out trip, but it actually was pretty good. The services were very good, the classes were informative, and the talent show, to me, was the best part.
You like the talent show. With your young people, you can see your peers and probably see where you can, what kind of thing you can do, what talent you can showcase next year at the next year's Congress, correct?
Yeah.
Maybe. So give us, maybe 5 words or less, where do you see the Congress heading? What would you like for it to do to even get better next year?
I'm not sure. It was good this year. I'm good with what I got.
So you liked it as is?
Yes.
That's good. That's really good. Well, thank you so much for interviewing with me, and I wish you the very best as a 10th grader, 11th grader, 12th grader. And who knows, you may be chaperoning some young people in the future.
Well, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Well, those are two of the probably 600 or 700 young people who have attended the Christian Education Congress here in Dover, Delaware. There were about 900 attendees, probably 75% of them young adults, from the very young, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, and then a whole host of teenagers and those who were going off to college. There were scholarships awarded last night, many, many scholarships. The talent was just wonderful. They were just great to listen to and to hear. They had an intergenerational panel that I attended, so we now know their ideas and their thoughts. And it's just a great way to end this portion. I actually have two other conferences I'm going to attend. I'm getting ready to go off to the National Speakers Association Conference and then the National Association of Black Journalists on August 1st. So you're going to hear a lot from me on the road. Take care. Enjoy your weekend. And thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.